Okay, so this week's Parsha is Parshas Vayigash, and the title of the shiur is called The Aging Process. And tonight's shiur, we're going to discuss this interaction between Yaakov and Paro that is described in the Torah in this week's Parsha. And there's a couple questions, natural questions, you know, that we can ask on the area, and we'll try to explain it. So if we start, we're going to start with the beginning of this story. It's like a mini story in the Parsha. It's Bereishis Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Zayin starts with, number one. It says, Vayave Yosef es Yaakov Aviv, Vayamideu Lifnei Paro, Vayavarach Yaakov es Paro. So Yosef, after the brothers and his father Yaakov had come down, he brings Yaakov and he stands him up before Paro, and Yaakov blesses Paro. Okay, the Mefarshim say, why does it say Vayami Deo, and he stands him up? Apparently he was very weak, and he was old, and he needed to be propped up. So it was important for Yosef to bring Yaakov to Paro and to prop him up, and Yaakov gives a bracha to Paro, gives a blessing to Paro. Okay? The Torah goes on, it says, Vayomer Paro el Yaakov, kama yimei shnei chayecha. So Paro says to Yaakov, how old are you? Vayomer Yaakov el Paro, and Yaakov answers Paro, So the days of the years of my sojournings are 130 years. So my days were few and terrible, and I haven't reached the age of my fathers. They lived longer than me. Okay, and then the Torah ends. Vayvarach Yaakov es Paro, vayitzeim lefnei Paro. So at the end, before Yaakov leaves, he gives another bracha to Paro, and then he leaves from before Paro. Okay, so what are some of the questions that emerge from the source sheet? Anybody? Debbie?
It's weird that he asked him how old he was.
Right, so why is Paro asking Yaakov how old he is? Right, so that's a good question. So what else? Any other questions? What'd you say?
I'm just thinking.
I think another question is that what's the purpose of this whole story? Why does the Torah even tell us about this exchange between Yaakov and Paro? It seems to be like kind of trivial. You know, who cares that Paro asked Yaakov how old he was and that Yaakov answered, I'm 130 years old. Right? So that's like a big question, an overall question. Yeah?
Yeah, why does he give him a bracha at the end?
Why does he give him a bracha in the beginning? Why is the Torah telling us about these brachos? Those are all the questions, basically, right? And also, another funny thing is, if you look in Pasuk Tes, he says, Vayomer Yaakov el Paro, yimei shnei migurai shloshim u'miyash shana me'at v'ra'im hayu yimei shnei chayai v'lo yisigu es yimei shnei chayai v'osai v'mei migurihem. It sounds like he's complaining about his life. He's saying, my life was very painful. So the question is, like, why is he doing that? Why is he complaining about his life to Paro? It seems strange, and why is the Torah recording this? That Yaakov complained about his life, his age. Okay, any other questions? Am I missing anything? Anybody? All right.
I think those are the big ones.
What?
I think those are the big questions.
Yeah, the big questions. Thank you. All right. So the first question is, what's the nature, and we're not going to answer this, we're going to have one general theme of what the idea is between this exchange between Yaakov and Paro, but we're going to start, you know, step by step and looking at the Mefarshim, and then hopefully we'll build up some more questions and then come to an answer, okay? So if we look at Zion, the first question is on Zion. It says, Vayave Yosef es Yaakov aviv, vayamideu lifnei paro, vayivarech Yaakov es paro. Okay, so Yosef brings Yaakov, his father, he stands in before Paro, and Yaakov blesses Paro. Okay, so what is this blessing? That is the first question. Okay, so Rashi says in number two, source number two, on this very pasuk, Vayivarech Yaakov, Hi she'ela shalom, kederech kol anirim lefnei hamalachim leprakim. So this is a greeting that Yaakov gave to Paro, which is the normal way that a person greets the king when he sees him occasionally. So it's he greets him and he says shlodir balaz lishol l'shalom. Okay, so basically what Rashi's saying is that it's not a real bracha that Yaakov is giving Paro, but he's merely greeting him. And the Torah is recording it as bracha, but it's not really a bracha. It's really just a greeting, right? Okay? You got me? Somebody say yeah.
I don't understand that.
Why?
Because then why would it be called a bracha?
Okay, so that's a question. So your question is, why is it called bracha if it's really a greeting? So that's a good question.
Right.
Right?
But another instance in the Torah where something like this happens?
Yes. Okay, good. There is another instance where this happens, so we're going to actually look into that. Right, but so your question is, why is it called bracha, which is a good question. But I think a more general question, which fits into the broader question that we had originally, is that why is the Torah telling us that Yaakov greeted Paro in the normal way that that a person normally greets a king, you know, if he sees them every once in a while? I mean, why does the Torah have to tell us this? It's obvious. Of course, Yaakov is going to greet Paro in this way. So why exactly is the Torah... Why does the Torah have to record something that seems to be trivial and seems to be commonplace? You would assume that Yaakov would greet Paro appropriately. So why does the Torah have to tell us that Yaakov greeted Paro appropriately? So that's the question. Okay? Where else do we see this? Debbie made a good point. Where else do we see this? We see the same idea or the same lashon of bracha, meaning a greeting, by Yaakov and Esav. So if you look at number 3 in the Psukim, it's Breishis Parak Lam Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph. It says, "Kach na es birchasi asher huvaslach ki chanani Elokim v'chiyash lichol v'yiftzar bo v'yikach." So Yaakov says to Esav, "Take the bracha, take the blessing in which I brought you, because God has favored me and I have everything. V'yiftzar bo v'yikach, and he prevailed upon him and he took it." Okay. So what is the birchasi? What does it mean, "Kach na es birchasi"? So Rashi, number 4, he says, Birchasi, minchasi. This is my meal offering. Mincha zuha ba al re'iyas panem v'lefrakim. Eina ba el l'shela shalom. So it's normal to bring a gift with you when you greet somebody. Just like when you go to a house on Shabbos and you bring a gift with you. It's normal, you go on a date and you bring something as a greeting, as part of the greeting. So too over here, when you greet somebody, when you greet a king, so you bring an offering, a meal offering. The chol bracha shehi le'riyas panim. Anytime it says bracha, which is associated with seeing somebody, kigon lahalan vayivarch Yaakov es paro, like our pasuk where it says that Yaakov blessed paro, asu iti bracha disancherev. Over there, there's another case. V'chein lishol lo l'shalom ulavarcho detoi melech hamas. So there's another case over there in Shmuel Beis. Kulam lashon bircha shalom hein. They're all like a greeting. It's a blessing of greeting. Shikorn balash shlotzir lishol b'shalom afzu birchasi mon shlud shalti shlomi. Sorry, I don't read the old French as well as I possibly could. But basically, what Rashi is saying is that the Torah uses bracha to mean a greeting, like a type of blessing as a greeting. And you see it in two places. One place you see it is by Yaakov and Paro, and the other place you see it is by Esav. When Yaakov approaches Esav, it says, "Kach nos birchasi asher huvaslach ki chanani Elokim chiyash licho v'yifzar bo v'yikach." And Rashi explains that the bracha that it's referring to is a greeting. It's a blessing. Blessing is also referred to as a greeting. Okay, but we still have the same question, which we're going to hold off in answering because, of course, you know, the point of the shiur or tonight's shiur, we're going to, you know, go step by step, and we're going to try to do one of those barrage of questions like we normally do, and then we'll try to give one big answer. But the main question is, why is the Torah telling us that Yaakov greeted Paro with bracha? Like, it seems obvious. It seems like something that you would assume naturally, and the Torah doesn't just write things for no reason. So the question is, why is the Torah telling us this? Okay? All right. Anybody have any other questions on this Rashi? And then the other question that Debbie asked was, which is, why is it called bracha? Why is She'ela Shalom greeting somebody called bracha? Okay? All right. Are we good? Hello?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's really Rashi. So Rashi assumes that the idea of this bracha is that it's not a special bracha, but it's really recording. The Torah's recording Yaakov greeting Paro. And that's what it means when it says, Vayivarch Yaakov is Paro. But the Ramban actually argues with the Rashi. He says, "Vayivarch Yaakov es Paro." He says, "He she'ela shalom k'derach kol anir lifnei malachim uprakim lashon Rashi." So first he quotes Rashi. He says that when it says "Vayivarch Yaakov es Paro," it really means just a regular greeting, which is what we said, which is Rashi. But he says, "Ve'eno nirakein." But this is not the case. She'in miderech musar hamalucha she'ishal adam b'shalom hamelech. It's not appropriate for a regular Joe, you know, like an average person, to approach the melech and ask him how he's doing. U'kamosha amru, like it says in Gemara Shabbos, klum yash evich nosin shalom l'rabo. Is there a servant that, you know, asks the Rebbe how he's doing? It's inappropriate. It's inappropriate for a lowly servant to ask the melech or the Rebbe how he's doing. Aval haya bracha mamish. So what is the Ramban's explanation? That really Yaakov gave Paro a bracha, a real bracha. Shederech hazakenim v'hachasidim habayim lefnei hamalachim levarech osam v'osher unechasim v'chava v'esnasei malchusam. So in general, when an older person and a wise man or a chassid, a person of a high spiritual nature, when they come to greet the kings, it's proper for them to give a blessing to the king, that they should have wealth, that they should have respect, that their kingship should last. U'ke'inyan sha'amar ha'kasov, like it says, Yechi Adonai HaMelech David le'olam. By David, the same thing occurred. U'vetzeso milafanav, and then when you leave from the king, Chazar u'birach oso litol reshus milafanav. Then you give another bracha in order to allow yourself to leave. V'amru rabosinu shiyala nilos l'raglav. So we're going to get to that, what that bracha was. Okay? So we have a basic machlokes, a basic argument between Rashi and the Ramban as to what it means when it says Vayvarech Yaakov is Paro. That when Yaakov met Paro, he gave a blessing to Paro. See, according to the Rashi, it just means that he greeted Paro. In a normal way, a person greets a king, you know, every once in a while. But according to the Ramban says it's not appropriate for a servant to greet the king in this way. So rather, it was a real bracha, that Yaakov was really expressing a blessing to Paro. And what was the nature of the blessing? The nature of the blessing was that normally when an older person or a wiser person or a chassid, a person on a high spiritual plane, when they approach the king, they offer them a blessing, that they should have a, that their kingship should last and that they should be respected and all those things. So apparently the Ramban is saying that's what the Torah is telling us. It's telling us that Yaakov, you know, blessed Paro in reality. Okay, but we still, I think what's bothering me, I know about this pasuk and this whole area, is that, you know, it's just the same question. You know, who cares, basically? Who cares that Yaakov greeted Paro, either he gave a bracha to Paro or that he greeted Paro? Who cares? Why does this matter? In the Parsha, why is the Parsha telling us, is the Torah telling us that Yaakov greeted Paro, right? Does anybody have any possibilities at this point as to why it matters or why it would be significant? Debbie, come on, step up.
I'm thinking.
You're thinking?
Yeah.
All right. All right, we're gonna come to an answer, I think. So a really good answer, in my opinion. All right, so let's just build a case. We're gonna build up the, like I said, we're gonna build a case to try to explain this whole area. So the next part of this equation is the question of Paro. How old are you? And Yaakov's answer. And I think that if there's one theme here, which I believe there is one theme in this whole back and forth, I think it'll fit in. Into the theme, okay? So the question that was raised on the Psukim is, why is Paro asked, Debbie I think asked this, why is Paro asking Yaakov how old he is, and what's Yaakov's answer? That he's complaining to Paro, like, I'm 130 years old, and my life was so hard. So why, you know, what is the nature of this? Okay, so look at the Ramban in number 6. I'm going to go slow. It says, Me'at v'ra'im hayu yimei shnei chayai. Lo yadati tam hazaken avinu. I don't know what his reason is. Why is Yaakov saying to Paro that my life is very hard? Ma musar hu she is onen el hamelech. So why is he? It sounds like he's complaining in the psukim. So what's he doing, or what, you know, what's he trying to impress upon the king by complaining to the king? Uma tam lemor velo hisigu esime shnei chaye avosai. What does it mean that I haven't lived the same length of years as my fathers? Ki ulai od yasigem v'yichye yoser mehem. Yaakov wasn't dead yet, so maybe he will live in the future to the same age as Avram and Yitzchak. You know, Avram and Yitzchak lived till 175, 180, so maybe he'll live that long. How does he know that he's not going to pass them in age? So the Ramban gives a good, yeah.
Telling him all this because he's talking to a king, so he doesn't want to seem like he wants to be humble,
Okay, okay.
Like, he's trying to give off a certain vibe to him so that, you know, if he sounded like everything was hunky-dory and great, then I don't know if that's the best way to, like, to greet someone and, like, develop a relationship with them. Why not, like, go on the opposite end and, like, try to be more humble to be speaking to a king? He would want to, like, present himself in this type of way.
Right. Okay. I hear what you're saying. That's good. All right. So we'll come back to that. That's definitely a good move. I like it. Okay. So let's go on in the Ramban, and then we'll come back to what you're saying. But I think, you know, just elaborate on it. So he says, Venira Li, or in the second line in the Ramban, number 6, he says, Venira Li, ki Yaakov avinu zarka bo seva v'haya nira zakin me'od. So Yaakov, he looked very old. Really, he looked older than what he was supposed to look like. Apparently, I guess, even though he was 130, he wasn't supposed to look as old as he did. And as we all know, stress ages a person, you know, terribly. You know, uparo tama al ziknuso ki ein rov anshe zmano ma'arichim yamim kolkach. And Paro, he was very stunned by Yaakov's age, because not only was he very old, but he looked very old, because many people in that generation didn't live to that age. It was, the Ramban maintains that only certain individuals, only, you know, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov lived very long, but the average age wasn't as long. Shekvar katzru shnosam, their years had already shortened. People were living normal ages. V'lachein shalo kama yimei shnei chayecha. That's why he's asking him, you know, how old are you? Ki lo ra'isi kemoscha zakein b'chol malchusi. I haven't seen any old person that looks as old as you. Okay, so what's Yaakov's answer? Az ani Yaakov ki yomav shloshim u'miyashana. So then Yaakov's answer is that I'm 130. Ve'al yisma b'hem, don't be so stunned. Kim'at heim k'neged shnos avosav shechayu yoser. But because they're less than what my forefathers lived to. Aval mipnei heyosam ra'im ba'amel v'anacha. Because the days were very terrible with work and pain. Zarka bo'seva v'nira zakin me'od. So he looked very old. Apparently, you can look older than 130. And he looked older than 130, even though he was old as is. So that's how the Ramban's explaining this back and forth between Paro and Yaakov. That really Paro noticed that Yaakov, he looked extremely old. The Psukim seem to also support that, because it says, Vayamideo lifnei Paro, that he needed to be supported and propped up. So he was extremely frail, extremely old. And Paro noticed this. He noticed that Yaakov looked extremely old, and this was stunning to him, because there's nobody in his kingdom, as he says, that looked as old as Yaakov. So what's Yaakov's answer? So Yaakov's trying to explain to Paro why he looks so old. He's saying, listen, I'm 130, and the reason why I look so old is because of all the stress and the pain in my life. Okay? So it's also another interesting thing. Why is the Torah, it's the same question, but what is the purpose of recording this? Why is the Torah telling us that Paro asked Yaakov how old he was, and Yaakov answers in this way? You know, the Torah doesn't just record, as it's the same question, but the Torah doesn't record trivial, you know, conversations between individuals unless there's an idea or a lesson that we can learn from it. So the question is, what is the lesson that we can learn from this whole exchange between Yaakov and Paro? Okay? Okay. Okay, and then we have one more point, okay? And then we're gonna start, you know, opening up the area. Okay, so the last point, I think, is if you look in number one, source number one, the last pasuk, it says, Vayivarech Yaakov es Paro, Vayetze milifnei Paro. So at the end of their conversation, it says that Yaakov blessed Paro, and then he left from before Paro. Okay, so if we look at Rashi, number 7, Rashi says like this, Vayivarech Yaakov, kiderech kol hanifdarim milifnei sarim. So he's consistent, and he says that whenever you leave a sar, a person who's in a level of who has a position of authority, mevarchim osam benot limrishos, you give them a bracha and then you ask for permission to leave. Meaning it's inappropriate to just walk out. You don't just turn your back, but instead you have to ask for permission. And part of asking for permission is to give a bracha. Uma barchu barcho. So what is the bracha that he blessed Paro with? Shiyala nilos l'raglov. That the Nile should come up to his legs. Why? Lefisha ein eretz Mitzrayim shosa megishamim ela nilus ola umashke. Because Mitzrayim, as we all know, the Mitzrayim were dependent on the Nile and they weren't dependent on rain. That was how they their whole irrigation worked. It was through the Nile. Umeberchaso she Yaakov va'ela chayaparo ba omed al nilus v'ola lekraso umashkeas aretz. And once Yaakov gave this bracha to Paro, apparently the bracha worked. And Paro, every time Paro would walk by the Nile would come up to Paro's legs, and then it would water the whole entire land. So just to summarize Rashi, again, Rashi saying that the nature of the end bracha that Yaakov gives to Paro is that Yaakov tells Paro that the Nile should come up to him wherever he's walking. It should come up to his legs, and then it'll water the ground, and the crops will grow, apparently. Okay, but it's like a strange bracha. First of all, the Torah should just tell us that Yaakov gave this bracha, but why does the Chazal say that it came true? Why did it have to come true? It could have just been, if the nature of the bracha is that it's just like a formality, and you're not supposed to leave the king without asking for Rishos, and you give a bracha, and that's normal, so then why did it have to come true? And furthermore, why did Yaakov want Paro, why did he want this to happen? You know, what value, in fact, I would think it's dangerous that, why should Paro think that that he controls the Nile? It's not really from Paro, it's from Yaakov, or it's not really from Yaakov, it's from God, but still, why did Yaakov want Paro to know this, or why did Yaakov want this to happen? And why did it come true? Okay? Can somebody say that they're following? Debbie?
Yes, following.
Okay, good. It's clear? Okay.
Yes.
So you have one more idea also of the nature of this bracha, and it comes up later on in the Psukim. It says in number 8 in the Ra. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't think it's so surprising that, the bracha came true. He wants this to be a good reflection on Hashem. He's like a representative of like a foreign religion to Paro.
Yeah, but
why is it?
But the bracha feeds. If anything,
it didn't come true, it would be worse.
No, but if anything, it creates the opposite effect because Paro, whenever he's walking, the Nile comes up to his legs, and it would seem like as though you know that he controlled it. But the reality is that he didn't. So, like, why would Yaakov want to create that impression? Why was that? In fact, I would say it's the opposite. I would say that it's a bad thing to do to bless Paro in this way and for this to happen.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And then you have one more thing in number 8. We all know. I don't know if we all know actually, but Yosef said that there was going to be 7 years of good and 7 years of famine, but apparently the 7 years of famine weren't really 7 years. And the Torah indicates that really after the first 2 years, things started getting better. So the question is why? So some of the Midrashim say that this was the bracha of Yaakov to Yosef. Yaakov to Paro. If you look at number 8, it says, V'sen zera lizra ha'adama. V'af al pi she'amar Yosef v'od chamesh shanim asher ein charish v'katzir. So Yosef said there'd be 5 more years of famine. Michevan sheba Yaakov l'mitzrayim ba'a bracha l'raglov. V'eschilu lizra v'kila harav. So once Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, apparently the famine ceased, and because Yaakov was there, and I didn't bring down the Midrashim, but the Midrashim actually say that this was the bracha. The bracha that Yaakov gave to Paro was that the famine should end, or shouldn't the famine should end early. So it's similar to what I think. I don't know. We have to explain it. So what's the nature of What is the nature of these two possibilities as to the bracha that Yaakov gave to Paro? One thing that Rashi is saying is that the bracha was that the Nile should rise when Paro is walking, and it should water the land. And the other bracha is that the famine should end early, and we see that both things came true. So the question is, why did they come true? You know, what is the Torah emphasizing here by saying that Yaakov blessed Paro and these things came true? Okay? All right. So, anybody have any other thoughts? Or Debbie? I know Debbie tried a possibility. All right. Okay.
I mean, yeah. I don't have anything else from before, no.
Okay. But I think your approach is a good approach. I just want to elaborate on the approach. Okay? All right. Okay. So, the question is, why is the Torah... The main question is, why is the Torah recording, you know, Yaakov's interaction with Paro? Why is this important? So, I think that there's a a couple ideas that could explain the area, and then we can go back and understand Rashi and the Ramban and what they're trying to tell us. Okay, so you see that Yaakov was really nervous about going to Mitzrayim. Why was Yaakov, what do you think? Why was Yaakov nervous about going to Mitzrayim? What would make him nervous about going to Mitzrayim? Anybody? Debbie? No? Why would he be nervous about going to Mitzrayim? Look at number 9. Look in the psukim. It says, Vayomer Elokim liYisrael b'maros halayla, Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov, Vayomer Hineni. Okay, so Yaakov is nervous, and Hashem appears to Yaakov before he brings his family to Mitzrayim. Vayomer Anochi Akel Elokei Avicha Al Tira Meridah Mitzrayim Ki Legoy Gadol Asim Chasham. So Hashem says, don't be afraid to go down to Mitzrayim, because I am going to make them, or you, into a big nation, and they'll be a big nation there. Anochi Ered Emcha Mitzrayim V'Anochi Alcha Gamalo V'Yosef Yashis Yado Al Einecha. Okay? Okay. So what are the psukim saying? The psukim are saying that, just the pshat of the psukim, they're saying that, why was Yaakov scared? So Yaakov was scared because he was nervous that the nation wouldn't be able to survive there. Right? He said that's why God addresses Yaakov's fear by saying, Al-Tira Merida Mitzrayim Ki Legoy Gadol Asim Chasham. So apparently, we see from that Yaakov was really troubled, or he was really nervous about the nation being able to survive there. Now, why was he nervous? Why would you say that he was nervous about the nation being able to survive there? Debbie? Or anybody else? Why would he be nervous about the nation's ability to survive there? Because for a lot of reasons, I think. I'm not asking for one particular reason, but for a lot of reasons. One possibility is that the culture was corrupt in Egypt, right? The Torah says in other places that the Egyptians were very involved in Avodah Zarah, they were very involved in lewdity, and if you bring the Jews down into Mitzrayim, so you create a dangerous situation for them, right? So he was nervous. He was nervous that the nation wouldn't be able to survive, that Klal Yisrael wouldn't be able to survive if they went down to Mitzrayim. So Hashem, in the Psukim, in number 9, Parak Mem Vav, sorry, Pasuk Gimel, it says, Vayomer Anochi HaKel Elokei Avicha Al Tira Meridah Mitzrayim Ki Legoy Gadol Asim Chasham. So don't be worried, because I will basically make you into a great big nation. But he's addressing Yaakov's fear. So one thing that we have to know before we answer the question of, you know, what the nature of the interaction between Yaakov and Paro is that Yaakov had a tremendous fear of, Yaakov had a tremendous fear that the Jews wouldn't be able to survive Mitzrayim. Okay? Okay? So, what was the plan of, to counteract this fear? What was Yaakov's plan? So if you look at number 10, where did the Jews live in Mitzrayim? Where do they live? It says, V'yashavta be'aretz Goshen. So the Jews, they lived in Eretz Goshen. And apparently, it was very important for them to live in Eretz Goshen. You see that Yosef sets up this whole thing with the brothers. Before, in the Pesukim before, Yosef tries to convince Paro that it's necessary for the brothers to live in Goshen. Why? Because they're very good cattle herders, and they were shepherds, and he tries to convince them that Goshen is a good place. But the question is, why was it so important that they live in Goshen? So if you look at number 11 in the Ramban explains. He says, V'yashavta be'aretz Goshen, Haya Yosef yodea ba'aviv shelo yirtze lamod be'aretz Mitzrayim asher sham habira lamalchus. So Joseph knew that his father would not want to stay in that part of Mitzrayim, that part of Egypt, where the royal palace was. Okay? Al-Kain shalach lo me'ata ki be'eretz Goshen yoshivenu. Okay, so that's why he now informed him that he will settle in the land of Goshen. So that's the v'tam ato v'necha mechubar pasaka elyon redai lai ato v'necha v'nei v'necha v'tzoncha v'karacha v'chol asher lach. Okay, so part of the way Yosef was communicating to Yaakov that we're going to live in Goshen. But apparently Yosef understood that Yaakov had a tremendous fear of Klal Yisrael coexisting with the Mitzrayim, because the Mitzrayim were corrupt, and they had a, you know, a terrible culture for Klal Yisrael to survive in. So one of the ways in which one of the ways in which Yosef tried to convince Yaakov to come down to Mitzrayim was by showing him that they would be isolated. And the idea of Goshen, the whole concept of Goshen, is that the Jews had to exist in an isolated from the palace, the Egyptian palace, in order to be removed from the society and to prevent assimilation to the society and prevent the destruction of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so that's one concept that we have to utilize in terms of answering all our questions. So just keep this on the back burner. Okay, the other idea is that, you see, Paro, the psukim don't say it outright, but it seems from the psukim that Paro had a tremendous ego, because you see, look at number 12, when he's appointing Yosef as the second in command, he says, "Ata tiyal besi v'alpicha yishak kolami rak hakisei agdal mimeka." So he says that you will be over my people, but only my kisei, my kingship, and my throne will be above you. So he seems to mention that that he will be above Yosef. And then look at number 13. It says, "Vayomer Paro Yosef, ani Paro biladecha lo yarim ish es yado ve'asraglo b'chol eretz Mitzrayim." He says, Paro says to Yosef, "I am Paro," meaning he's trying to show Yosef, "Listen, I am the king. I'm the melech. You're not the melech. But other than you, nobody will be higher than you. So basically, Paro is establishing, you know, his own greatness, his own kingship, and Yosef is underneath him. But you see that Paro had a very strong ego. He was the king of Egypt, and he wanted to make clear that Yosef, although Yosef had power over his people, he still was underneath him in terms of kingship, and that the kingship only belonged to Paro alone. So you see that Paro had a very strong ego. And then you see, look at Rashi. Rashi explains, "Ani Paro sheyesh cholas biyadi ligzor gzeros al machusi." I am Paro, and I have a power to make decrees on my whole entire kingship. "Va'ani gozer shlo yarim ishes yado biladecha." And I am the one who's decreeing that nobody will raise their hand except for you. "Shlo bereshuscha," without your permission. "Davar acher," what's another possibility? "Ani Paro, ani heya melech ubiladecha v'zehu dugmas rak hakise." So he's reiterating, the second possibility is that he's reiterating to Yosef, "I am the king and you are not the king, but an old Raka Kisei Agdami Mecca." But you see from this that it was important for Paro, when he's appointing Yosef, to demonstrate that he's the king and that he's in control and Yosef's not in control. Okay? And then later on in the Psukim, although there's a machlokas, whether it was the same Paro or not, you see that Paro thinks so highly of himself that he makes himself into a god. It says in number 15, "Lecha Paro abokir inei yotei amayma v'nitzavta likrasol svasi orva matar shenar pach l'nachash t'kach b'yadecha." And I don't know why I didn't put in the Rashi there, but it's famous Rashi. Rashi says that Paro used to go to the bathroom early in the morning by the Nile River, so then, and because he pretended that he was a god, and he didn't want people, part of the way he pretended that he was a god was that he never had to go to the bathroom. But he really did go to the bathroom, but nobody would be able to see him. But the idea is that he fancied himself a god. So you see that Paro had a tremendous ego, and you know that Yaakov was very fearful from a psukim. He was very fearful of Klal Yisrael going down to Egypt, and Yosef has to reassure Yaakov by telling him, "Oh, they'll be living in Goshen. They'll be isolated from the rest of the Mitzrayim, and that's how they'll survive." Okay. So I think those are the two key points in terms of, you know, answering all the questions and trying to gain insight into the interaction between Yaakov and Paro. Why do I, you know, what do I mean by that? Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. So the question was, why is it important to tell us, according to Rashi, why is it important to tell us that Yaakov greeted Paro, you know, the normal way a person would greet a king? And the Ramban seems to argue, and he seems to say that, really Yaakov was like a zakein and a chassid who go before the melech and he gives a real bracha. So the main question that we had was, why is the Torah telling us this, right? So how can we answer that? So I think we can answer it by using the two ideas, you know, developed before, which is that on the one hand, Yaakov was very nervous about Klal Yisrael and their survival, and on the other hand, he recognized Paro's ego. Okay, so with those two ideas, we can understand Rashi and the Ramban a little bit deeper. You see, Yaakov, he knew that this interaction or this encounter with Paro was critical in terms of ensuring the survival of Klal Yisrael. And oftentimes in life, we all know about first impressions, and first impressions are very important in life in terms of succeeding in life. And Yaakov's interaction with Paro was initially, when it says Vayivarach Yaakov as Paro, was really Paro's, it really reflected Yaakov's understanding of Paro's psychology as an egocentric person, but also in combination with his desire to protect Klal Yisrael and to protect their survival. Because you see, Yaakov was actually an old person, but he was also a very important person. I mean, he was well known, and he was the from the offspring of Avraham, and Avraham was very well known, and as the Torah describes. So he wasn't a slouch. You know, he was an important person. Yaakov was an important person. But now he was meeting up with Paro, and Paro has a tremendous ego. We saw from the Pesukim before. So when an important person like Yaakov met up with Paro, it could create, you know, a bad situation. It could create a situation of competition, right? So the Torah, so Rashi is explaining to you the significance of greeting Paro in this way. Why? See, the idea of Shel Hashem, Kedar Kol Nirm of the Amalachim, is that see, Yaakov approached Paro in a humble way, like Debbie was saying. He approached Paro as as a servant, as somebody who is beneath the king. And that's the idea, just like he approached Esav. By Esav, it says, Kach nas birchasi asher uvaslach, ki chanani elokim achi yesh li chol vayiftar bo vayikach. You see, by Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov understood that Esav also had a tremendous ego. And the way to approach, if you're an important person like Yaakov, but you want to impress, you want to make a good impression, and you don't want to create a competitive environment, you need to be humble. You need to approach the king in the proper way. So Rashi's telling you, Rashi's telling you that the Torah is explaining that Yaakov was very cognizant of how his impression on Paro would affect the survival of Klal Yisrael. And he didn't want to create a situation where Paro would feel competitive with Yaakov in terms of their importance, in terms of their significance. So Yaakov takes the initiative in approaching Paro, and he immediately assumes the role of a servant, of somebody who's subject to the king. So that is the significant. According to Rashi, see, Rashi's saying that was the approach of Yaakov, that Yaakov was really trying to subjugate himself before the king, as anyone who would approach the king would do. But this was even more important by Yaakov because of the fact that he was an important person, and because it could create a potential situation of tension, and therefore it could harm or threaten Klal Yisrael's survival. So the Torah is telling us how Yaakov approached Paro to teach you this idea. Okay, but what's the machlokas between the Ramban and Rashi now? You see, so I think Rashi is saying, like Debbie said, that really he was humble and he was approaching Paro as a figure who was beneath Paro and not on the level of Paro in order to not create a competitive situation. But the Ramban's saying that there's another way that you can approach the king where you don't compete with the king, but you approach them almost as like an elder, as like an advisor to the king. So that's the Ramban. The Ramban's saying, look at the Ramban closely. He says, "Shederach hazakenim v'chasidim habayim lifnei amalachim levarich osam ba'osher nechasim v'chavod v'snase malchusam." So according to the Ramban, Yaakov wasn't approaching Esav as a he wasn't approaching Paro as a subject, but he was approaching him as an elder. But in both of them are saying the same idea, that Yaakov, he didn't want to create a situation of competition with Paro, because he understood that Paro was a very egocentric person, and that Klal Yisrael were dependent on Yaakov, and they were really dependent on Paro to survive, and Yaakov understood this, so he's trying to avoid a situation of conflict with Paro. So he's either approaching Paro as a subject of Paro, or he's approaching Paro as an elder of Paro. Meaning, an elder, you don't look at an elder as an advisor, as a competitor. You look at him as somebody who's trying to help you. So the idea is that Yaakov, he understood his role. He knew that he was important and significant. He knew that Paro had an egocentric personality, and he's trying to create a situation of the least amount of tension. Okay, do you guys accept that, or does that make sense, Debbie?
Yeah, but yeah. More sense that if he understands how Paro is egocentric, it just makes more sense that the vehicle he would use would not necessarily be an elder, would be more like speak very humble, and like that just makes more sense to me.
I think there's just two different approaches. I think.
I know, I understand.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's the difference between Rashi and Ramban.
In the same, they both like it's the same concept in the sense that he he's recognizing his role. I'm just saying, it, to me, it makes more sense that his role would be more of the humble servant, not the
right.
my elder.
Okay, could be. Okay, so you like Rashi better than the Ramban. That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay. All right, fine. But I'm just saying, I think both of them are approaching it the same way. That Yaakov understands psychology. He understands he's nervous about the survival of Klal Yisrael, and he's trying to avoid a situation of tension with Parah. Okay? But there's two different ways to do that. One way is what Rashi's saying, to subjugate yourself. And the other way is what the Ramban's saying, to put yourself almost above the king, like as an elder, an advisor to the king. But not, but avoid conflict, avoid tension with Parah. Okay? But then you have this strange back and forth between Paro and Yaakov. You know, how old are you? And Yaakov says, I'm very old. And not only am I very old, but my life is hard. You know? So we had the same. So how does this fit into the approach of the Ramban or the approach of Rashi? Because the whole thing is one theme. The whole thing, I think, the whole idea of these psukim is that it's expressing, you know, how Yaakov plans to approach Paro in order to ensure the safety of Klal Yisrael. So I think that there's two directions you can go, just like we went within the framework of Rashi and the framework of the Ramban. So I think let's start with the Ramban. So the Ramban is saying that Yaakov is approaching as like an elder, as an older person, a wiser person. So why does Yaakov say, "Oh, my life is so hard"? Me'at ve'ra'im. Why is he telling Paro this? Because it adds to your status as an elder. You see, when a person goes through a lot in their life and they have a hard life, people tend to respect that person more. They tend to look at them as, as somebody who's separate, somebody who deserves respect. Whereas a person whose life was easy, not the case. It's not, you don't look at a person whose life was easy in the same way as you look at a person whose life was hard. So the idea, according to the Ramban, I think, is that Yaakov, he's trying to create this image as an advisor and an elder of Paro. But he's showing Paro that, you know, he didn't have an easy life. Why? Because he knew that Paro would respect him as an elder more so if he understood, you know, that his life was hard and that he had to endure a lot, but he got through it. So the idea of the Torah's recording of Paro asking Yaakov how old he was and Yaakov, you know, giving into it is that Yaakov understands that he has an opportunity to be viewed as an elder, an advisor to Paro, and he's trying to feed that by telling him, oh, my life was hard. Why? Because, like I said, when a person's life is hard, you know, it tends to engender, like, a greater respect for the person. If a person goes through life on easy street, you know, you don't really respect that person as much as a person who, you know, endured a lot, but got through it and survived and succeeded afterwards. So the idea of the Torah telling us Yaakov's, complaint to Paro is that he wasn't legitimately complaining, but he was feeding this idea that I'm an elder of Paro. And the way he was doing it was that by showing him that, I had a hard life. I didn't have an easy life. And that usually engenders respect. Okay, and what about Rashi? How would you explain it for Rashi? So Rashi would say that it's the same idea. It's not that we're not in competition. It's an idea that I'm beneath you. My life stinks. My life is hard. Your life is great. So it's an idea of showing Paro that, you have a great life and my life stinks. And why would you want, you wouldn't want my life. It's like the same idea about Esav. Yaakov tries to show Esav, listen, my life's hard. You don't really want my life. So it's the same thing with Yaakov. Yaakov is trying to tell Paro, you don't really want my life. There's nothing to compete with me about because my life was hard. Yeah, you might think that I'm an important person. And that's why Yaakov is addressing that by subjugating himself. But also, I'm not that important. My life stunk. You don't want my life. You don't want to compete with me for my life. So both ideas fit in. They fit into what the psukim are trying to tell us. They're consistent with their approaches. Rashi's approaching it that Yaakov was subjugating himself. He was being very humble. And the idea of expressing my life is very hard is feeding that humility and feeding the idea that Paro is not in competition with Yaakov. And the opposite approach to the Ramban, which is that Yaakov is trying to express to Paro that I'm an elder, I'm an advisor. And it's a similar idea. We're not in competition, but he's feeding the image of an advisor by telling Paro, you know, my life is hard. Because you respect somebody whose life is hard more so than you respect somebody on easy street. Okay? Does that make sense? Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So we have one more point, one last point. So you have this weird bracha that you're giving, that Yaakov is giving to Paro, right? And the Rashi, we said, is explaining that, and the Chazal, it's just not just Rashi, it's Chazal. The Chazal say that, what is the bracha? Because the Ramban quotes the same exact thing. What was the bracha? That Paro should walk, and the Nile should come up to his legs, and it should, it should wash the whole entire land and irrigate the land. So what kind of bracha is this? That was the question, right? What kind of bracha? So I think with this approach, we can answer that also. You see, when do countries blame the Jews for everything in general? It tends to be when the economy is bad, like you see in Germany. It's not the Germans were intrinsically anti-Semitic, but the economy was terrible after World War I. And when the economy is bad, there tends to be blaming of the Jews, and the Jews end up getting persecuted typically when that happens. So I think that's an idea that Yaakov understood. He understood that the best way for the Jews to survive is if the Egyptians are happy, and if Paro's happy and the Egyptians are happy. If everybody's happy, then nobody cares about the Jews. Then the Jews can survive, and they can procreate, which is what happened in Goshen, and they can exist apart from Mitzrayim, and they can become a great nation. But if the economy is not going so well, or the king's not happy, so then you have problems. Then the Jews usually tend to get persecuted, and there tends to be greater problems. So what's the nature of this bracha? So I think it fits in beautifully. Why? Because the bracha is saying two things. One is that the economy of Egypt should be should be satisfactory. It should be great. That's the idea of the Nile rising whenever Paro walks, and the land being irrigated. And you see the same type of bracha by the famine stopping, early. The idea being that the economic growth of Egypt should be good and should be solid. But also the idea that the Nile rises when Paro walks is that Paro feels like he's responsible for it, and that feeds his ego. But when Paro's ego is being satisfied, he's not going to be concerned with the Jews in Goshen. He'll be unconcerned, and he won't try to persecute them. He won't try to involve them in any government plans. So the idea is to try to keep the idea of the bracha is to try to keep the Jews as isolated as possible from the Mitzrayim. And Yaakov understood that there's two ways to do that. One is by keeping the people happy, by making their economy grow, and the other is by keeping the king happy, by feeding his ego, by making him feel like he's responsible for the economic growth. So that's the idea that Yaakov really is expressing to Paro, and apparently God was, it wasn't Yaakov's bracha, it was Yaakov's bracha, but the way the bracha came true was through God. But apparently there is a truth and a reality to this, the nature of this bracha, which is that as long as the Egyptians were distracted, and as long as Paro's ego was being satisfied, then the Jews were okay. And you see that it worked out well, because the Jews ended up, it says, Paru, Vayishutsu, Vayirbu, Me'od, Me'od, they were able to procreate, become a great nation. But if not for this encounter between Yaakov and Paro, perhaps they wouldn't have. So I want to just, summarize, the main point of the shir, and just try to elaborate on the main idea. So the main idea is that really this encounter between Yaakov and Paro was not trivial at all, but rather it really reflected Yaakov's understanding of Paro's psychology and his understanding also of, of what was necessary for Klal Yisrael to exist in Mitzrayim. And he had to take proper measures in encountering Paro in order to ensure the safety of Klal Yisrael and the growth of Klal Yisrael. So how does he do that? So the Torah is telling us that this encounter is expressing to us how he does that. That he approaches Paro in a way where he doesn't create a situation of tension or competition, but rather he's trying to, either like Rashi's saying, he's trying to subjugate himself to Paro as he does to Esav, or he's trying to not subjugate himself but approach Paro as an elder. And then the idea of telling him his age and his life being hard is also an idea of either feeding, this lack of competition, this idea of lack of competition, that Paro really wouldn't want Yaakov's life, his life's not so great. Or the other way, which is that Yaakov's trying to show him that he's an elder, and you respect somebody more when they endure, hardship in their life. And then you have this last idea. The last concept is really the culmination, which is that Yaakov, he blesses Paro. How does he bless Paro? By telling him that the Nile should rise whenever, wherever Paro walks. What's the significance of this bracha? Because he understood that as long as Paro is being satisfied, his ego is being satisfied, and as long as the economy of Egypt is growing, so the Jews could be left isolated. Okay, so the point of the Torah, see, everything in the Torah is for meaning and for purpose. And you read through this story without a deeper understanding, and you're like, why is the Torah telling me this? Why is this important? But now you see it's, everything's so important. The Torah just expresses every nuance to teach you very important concepts. And the importance of this concept is that this brief encounter where Yaakov, it simply says that Yaakov blessed Paro, he tells Paro how old he is, and then he blesses Paro. That simple encounter could have possibly saved Klal Yisrael from destruction in Mitzrayim. And Yaakov wasn't so mechal anes. He wanted to create a situation where he could ensure that Klal Yisrael, you know, would be safe, would survive. And that explains, I think, or summarizes this whole encounter between Yaakov and Paro. Okay? Does anybody have any questions on the idea or any thoughts on the concept? Debbie?
I think it was very clear.
Oh, okay. Anybody have questions?
I think that your comment at the end was, like, it's true. Like, it seemed like a not necessarily an important event, like, who cares that they met each other, but obviously now we see that there is a major importance to it.
Yes. Yes, okay, good. Thank you. all right, so if nobody has questions, all right, so I'm just going to want to wish everybody a good Shabbos, and thanks for calling in. And next week, well, same thing, okay? All right.
Great.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too. Thanks. Have a good Shabbos. Bye-bye.